Good morning, good day, and welcome to TMO's Daily Observations Podcast. It's Monday, February 24th, 2020, and I'm your guest host, Brian Chaffin, sitting in for Kelly Gaumont. With me today is Age Before Beauty, John Martellaro.
And lots of age. Good morning, Brian.
I'm glad you laughed instead of cursing me. And also with us today is one of my favorite photographers in the entire world, Andrew Orr.
Hey, it's afternoon where I am, but good to be here.
It's morning in Cupertino, and I think that's where the world is centered. I think.
Good point.
No, it's a terrible point. All right. Sponsoring us today is Zapier. I'm going to tell you about them a little bit later. And with that in mind, let's jump straight into sort of bitter, sweet. I don't even know. I still have mixed emotions about Steve Jobs and his passing all this time. But it is his birthday. He would have been a mere 65 today. Taken from us too early for sure. Should have taken me. Well, all right, that's morbid. I won't go any further down there. But one of the things I thought we could do is because we have a pretty like diverse panel today, counting me and from we're all white males, but from the standpoint of we have someone who is relatively new to the Apple space. Someone who has been in the Apple space for a very long time and actually worked at Apple, and then someone who's been in the Apple space for quite a while and has been covering Apple for quite a while. So I thought what we could do is we could just look at and talk about maybe some of our favorite memories or some of the things that really stand out for us about Steve Jobs. Start with you, John.
Well, my only direct dialogue with Steve Jobs was at WWDC in May of 1997. This was before I went to work for Apple. Attending WWDC and getting to know people was part of the success of getting a job with Apple. But that's an aside. So Friday, May 16th, 1997, they had this closing keynote with Steve Jobs because he was not yet the CEO. And so it was kind of like question and answer session with Steve, who was probably not even yet the iCEO of Apple, but came back as part of the next acquisition. And he had this fireside chat with the WWDC audience. And luckily, I got to the microphone. And there was this generally feeling amongst me and other people, too, that Apple wasn't doing enough TV advertising to establish that they were back. You know, they had a new G3 processor from IBM. They had Steve. They had this Rhapsody, which was the precursor of what we used to call Mac OS X. And it looked like Apple was getting back on track, but they were invisible on TV and they were kind of being beaten up by the competitors. And so I asked Steve Jobs about that at the microphone, and he was very reflective and gave us a different perspective about how profitability is the first order bit of marketing, not marketing pomposity. And he went into this little story about how, you know, if you do a pompous ad on page 7 of the Wall Street Journal and spend $1 million, but the journalists on page 1 are not telling people you've got a great product, then it just seems like it's a waste of money. And it seems like excessive hubris. And his explanation was, we need a great product so that people are talking about us in print and telling the readers how good we are. And so he said, we're not going to do any television advertising this year. We're going to go into print. We're going to be low key and we're going to work really hard and we're going to spend that money on R&D. And so we'll have a hot product for people to talk about. And then the journalists will say we're back instead of we saying we're back. It was an interesting and enlightening session. In just a few minutes, he kind of encapsulated how Steve Jobs thought, his thinking pattern about how to resurrect Apple. And it was very interesting. And so I wrote this article in 2011 called My First Encounter with Steve Jobs. We'll put it in the show notes. And there's a link to the video and the interaction with him will keep for me. And it was at about the 45-minute point. But in general, the whole video is worth watching. It's classic. Steve was in his classic black turtleneck and long hair. 1997, so he was, 44 years old or so. 43.
He was really frank in those early days. And he answered he answered a lot of questions, a lot of, like, when developers asked him questions, he often, it seemed, answered. And then when Apple employees asked questions, he was answering. And that is, that was probably a relatively short phase. I'm not saying that I could be wrong. That's my gut take on that, is that he was unusually frank for the first couple of years back at Apple.
Yeah, well, I think even though he wasn't the CEO yet, even when he was just an advisor to Gail Amelo, he was very keen on what Apple needed to do and very forceful in his advice about how to resurrect Apple.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, well, that is an interesting firsthand memory. Andrew, you're relatively new to the Apple world. Like, I mean, you got weren't you telling me that you got your first Apple device? I mean, essentially, it was the year after Steve died.
Yeah, 2012. I had the iPad 2.
So, did you pay attention to him at all before that? To, like, you know, was Steve Jobs even like a name that had any relevance to you?
I had heard of the name. I wouldn't say it was really super relevant to me back then. I think I remember seeing one keynote. It might have been for the iPhone 4S, but it didn't really stick with me at the time. I just saw it as just another technology announcement. Mm. But yeah, I have since then watched old keynotes with Steve. The two I think that stand in my mind the most were when he unveiled the iPad and also when he unveiled the phone. And I think that's just because they were both new products. And I could tell, obviously, that he was a great showman. He just knew how to get people excited for the products. You know, and when he was introducing the iPhone, he said, it's an iPod, a phone, an internet communications device, and the crowd was just going nuts. And so,
are you getting it?
I think that was
Dave Hamilton and I were in that crowd. I was sitting next to Dave, and when Steve held the price to the very, very end, and I kept telling Dave, "I don't care how much it costs. I don't care. I don't care. I'm buying." Yeah,
I was there too, sir. I was on one side of Dave, and I think you were on the other.
So what was it like for you guys there?
Steve notes were always really interesting. He was a great showman. I remember there were so many rumors about Apple doing a phone for years before the iPhone was actually announced, and including we had some information fed to us that I didn't run with because I couldn't confirm it. And I don't even know, I to this day, I don't actually know if that information was actually correct or if it was just simply correct because that's what Apple ended up doing. It's very hard to tell, but I remember Steve talking about he wanted 10% of the smartphone market, which was essentially 1% of the cell phone market. And, you know, they pretty much captured that in spades. But I John, would you agree with me that certainly while he was alive, there was certainly a touch of taking him for granted? The Steve
notes. I'm taking what for granted?
Taking Steve notes for granted.
I didn't feel that way. I always felt there was a sense of anticipation and a sense of jazz and a sense of one more thing and a sense of this was what Apple was all about. I remember attending early WWDC keynotes where key technologies were being introduced, most notably iMovie and iPhoto. And he would do these demonstrations of kids on the beach and families and fathers with their kids and memories, and then he would close with, "This is why we do what we do." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I always had this feeling that Steve Jobs was sort of like the searing mind of brilliance and inspiration and vision behind Apple. And so every time he came up on stage, there was a sense of exuberance and excitement just being there. You never knew what to expect. I remember there was a downside of Steve too, and that was he could be very brutal. Got another story for you. So every year when I was at Apple, I don't know if they do it anymore, the sales team, and it's pretty big, would have a get together, a congregation and conference, and it would last 3 or 4 days. And there was a kickoff meeting in town hall with Steve Jobs and Phil Schiller. And it was sort of like a question and answer session for the sales team. This was the federal and the enterprise sales group. And town hall was packed because there was a lot of us. And one of the systems engineers made the mistake of raising his hand and asking Steve about advertising. And Steve was very gung-ho on the idea that the sales team was face-to-face with the customer, and it was our responsibility to convey to the customer personally their efforts, the quality of this products. And this was the time when Windows XP was riddled with viruses. And so Steve felt like if he was a showman and he could close the deal, then you should be a deal closer too. And so when Mike talked about advertising on television, Steve Jobs got really huffy. And he said, "Well, tell you what, why don't I just fire all of you, take the money and put it into TV advertising? How about if I do that?" And there was silence in the room, like, are we all, you know, because there was always this anticipation, no matter what Steve Jobs said, it could really happen tomorrow. You could wake up and find yourself, you know, out of a job.
Yeah.
And so.
And he was notorious for not liking sales folks.
Well, I think he was notorious for the fact that salespeople weren't successful in convincing customers to switch to Apple in an environment that was all business and all Microsoft. Because Microsoft checked all the boxes. You know, they had Microsoft Exchange, they had the Office, they had the operating system that everybody used. You know, Microsoft had it all. And to convince a corporation, even a small business, to drop the business essential lock-in, you know, they were just like, we're locked into the Apple's ecosphere. Microsoft people were locked in and they're not going to switch easily. And Steve Jobs kind of felt like it was our job to make that case because the products were so cool and so elegant. And so I think that was the source of his irritation. Not that he just hated salespeople as a entity.
All right. Fair enough. But we have to cut it off there. So let me, in fact, tell you about Zapier. Growing a business is hard, especially when you're wasting hours every day moving data from emails to spreadsheets to your CRM or wherever. Shouldn't that kind of stuff just happen without you lifting a finger? Zapier can help. Zapier is the easiest way to automate your work. It connects all your business software and handles work for you so you can focus on the things that matter most. No more wasting your time on tasks that you know could be automated, because that's exactly what Zapier was built to do. Just go to our special link, zapier.com/TDO, connect the apps you use most, and let Zapier take it from there. Zapier lets you instantly engage with leads, send them to a CRM or spreadsheet, then notify your team so they can act fast on every opportunity. And that's just scratching the surface. Zapier supports more than 1,500 business applications, so the possibilities are virtually endless. Best of all, it's easy to build the exact solution you need in minutes without writing code or asking a developer for help. Join more than 4.5 million people who are saving an average of 40 hours per month by using Zapier. And right now, through the end of the month, you can try Zapier for free by going to our special link. That is zapier.com/TDO. That's Zapier.com/TDO for your free 14-day trial. Once again, that's Zapier.com/TDO. Now, for the other half of the show, which is going to be less than half the show because we went long on Steve, which is not really all that surprising. Andrew, can you tell us about this business about location data and the clipboard?
Yes. Yeah, so some people recently discovered this thing with the clipboard in iOS. People from MISC, M-Y-S-K. So here's what they found. They were using all the latest versions of iOS and iPadOS, And they found that some data may end up leaking through the clipboard because they noted that all apps have, it sounds like all apps have unrestricted access to the clipboard or pasteboard, and that it's not really obvious when an app is using and accessing this information. And so they found, for example, if you take a picture with the camera, it will embed location data, mm-hmm. The timestamp, OS version, the device model in the EXIF data. And if you copy that photo to the clipboard to paste it somewhere else, an app could capture that data from it.
Now, would that be like, I mean, would an app have to be maliciously doing that?
They do mention malicious apps, but they mentioned it was, these apps could only affect it in certain circumstances. Let me see where this quote was. So they say that apps can only really access the clipboard in the background, I think. And then, well, it's not just photos. A lot of different types of content can be stored in the clipboard. And so potentially these apps can, a malicious app could find, maybe you copied a pasteboard, or I mean, maybe you copied a password to the pasteboard, or maybe a URL, a document that could be a sensitive document like financial information. Yeah. And so also with universal clipboard, it could also maybe affect Macs too, because you can, like, there's this thing where you can copy something from one device and then paste it on another device. It syncs like that.
Yeah, through handoff and continuity. Yeah. Why the other part of that story was that Apple says this isn't a problem.
Yeah, they didn't share the exact statement Apple gave them. They just said Apple informed us that they don't see an issue with this vulnerability. Now, to me, like, the impression that I got from this is that I think this affects all iOS devices. They just were only testing ones with the latest version of iOS. And I think this is just how the clipboard is designed to work. And I don't think Apple, maybe they did think of this, maybe they didn't, but I wonder if maybe they could fix this by trying to come up with some way to restrict access to the clipboard where maybe apps can only read certain things. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's kind of hard because, like, I certainly have copied, a password from 1Password. And mm-hmm. and gone to use it in an app, and you know, how do you restrict that? How do you restrict that without making it useless?
Yeah.
And so, wow, that's. But the titular angle to your piece was location data, and I hadn't even thought about the other aspects of it, but the location data being there, that. I'm not quite on board with Apple's position that this isn't a problem.
If you go to privacy,
it seems weird to me.
If you go to settings, privacy, location services, camera, you can turn off location services for your camera, and that will keep the EXIF file from being populated.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but now you're just making your device less useful. Because there are plenty of reasons to have location data attached to your
own picks. As Dave Hamilton is fond of saying, security is a trade-off between convenience and absolute security.
Always.
It is, but then again, it's still like that works for location data from photos, but there are still, like I said, other data that can be read. And so I did find the part of the article I was trying to remember. So they say iOS and iPadOS are designed to allow apps to read the pasteboard only when apps are active in the foreground. But there are different techniques a malicious app can use in order to increase the likelihood the app can read the pasteboard. For example, a widget extension can read the pasteboard as long as it is visible in today view. And on iPad, there is a setting where that today view is always visible. And so presumably that means that clipboard access is always there as well.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, Andrew, you're going to have to keep us up to date on this.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll keep an eye on this.
With that in mind, I want to thank Zapier for sponsoring TDO this week. And I want to thank you, Andrew, for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I want to thank you, John, for being with us. I very much appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And on that happy note...